Good day, mate.
Kia ora koutou katoa from Aotearoa.
Magandang araw mga beshies.
This is Finding Answers Season 2 with JR.
And Tina.
Alright.
Kamusta?
Hey, what's up? It's been a while.
It's been a while. Every week.
Every week, that's my go-to saying. Yeah. It's been a while. Hey, remember when we talked about the Australian visa options 2 weeks ago? We've seen so much traction for that episode. A lot of people are really, really, really interested about this visa options discussion for Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And every week I check the analytics, and yes, in fact, this and the New Zealand episode, which also talked about the same thing, visa options, are actually two of our most listened to episodes. So we could see that so many of our kabeshies are definitely interested in this topic for sure.
Correct. And since this Australian visa episode is mostly us walking our listeners through the different options, which is mostly theory, you know, because we just based our interpretations of based the episode on our interpretation of what was written in the Immigration Australia websites, it would be so much more helpful for our kabeshies to hear it straight from someone who has actually been in the journey of those visa navigation and all that.
Totoo yan. And that's why I've invited my mate in today's episode, who can share what it's actually like to go through not one, not two, but three different visa options.
Dami rin.
Diba? Three visa options.
So and who is our guest, Tina?
JR and Kaveshis meet Sebastian. How do you say your surname again?
it's Sebastian Kunze.
Kunze. Seb for short.
Seb the Australian way. That's right.
I've known Seb as a client from my past life in Manila, working in the embassy, and now we're good friends with him and his girlfriend. So hi, Nicola, if you're listening. Kabeshis, Seb is regional recruitment manager from Victoria University and has just recently become an Australian citizen a few weeks ago. Congratulations!
Wow, congrats!
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys.
So we'll know more about his whole journey from Germany to Australia very shortly. But for now, welcome to Finding Answers, Seb.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me. It's really exciting. It's one of my first podcasts that I'm doing, so
yay!
Looking forward to it.
We're popping your podcast cherry. wait, first things first. So how are you doing now, and how is everything going?
Oh, you know, doing all right. The lockdown is challenging, of course, but I think we're getting through it all right. Can only get better, hopefully, in Melbourne.
Yeah, we're down to like 50 today, right? From 40 yesterday.
Wow.
Like in a month's time, 700 plus, we're now down to 50. So we're very optimistic and hopeful.
We have to.
Yeah. Can you give us, Seb, a summary of your personal journey from, say, leaving Germany to deciding to move to Australia?
Yeah, sure. So I moved to Australia a while back. It was 2011 when I decided I wanted to do another master's degree. And I actually back then never intended to migrate to Australia. I was, like I said, interested to do another degree. And I came as a student to Brisbane in 2011 and studied at the University of Queensland. And when I finished my studies, I was able to stay in Australia on a working holiday visa back then. Then I moved to a sponsorship visa shortly after. And then I applied for PR, and recently I applied for citizen. So it's been quite a journey, like you've said before, and there's been many, many different visas involved for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. At least you have like, you can be like really the go-to person of the different types of visa that we have enumerated last time as well. So there may have been lots of changes from 9 years ago when you first applied for a student visa, but for us to have a picture of it, could you walk us through how you applied for that student visa before and describe to us how was your life then as an international student?
Yeah, no problem. So I applied back then from Germany. It was an online application. It was really, really easy. The Departments of Home Affairs website is really transparent for all kinds of visas. I applied online and I think I got my student visa granted in 48 hours. So it was super quick. Wow. Yeah, I didn't expect that. It was so quick and I was ready to fly over. And when I arrived, it was obviously all very, very new and exciting. Definitely, one of the best times of my life, you know, being an international student in Australia. It was amazing. Australia has so much to offer. Especially the multicultural environment and meeting so many people and friends from all over the world that you never really miss again. You know, you can stay in touch via Facebook, social media. So I think that was really the biggest reward for me while I studied, meeting people from really all over the world. And yeah, I can call them friends now, which is amazing. Apart from that, it wasn't just all fun, of course. You also have to put in a lot of work, especially when you're a student. I did a lot of part-time work while I was studying, and part-time jobs are quite easy to get in Australia, especially as an international student. So I was working in hospitality, I did sales jobs, door knocking jobs, I worked in restaurants, I worked as an auditor for the university at one point, and I then also worked as a student ambassador, which was really, really exciting. And it's really closely related to what I'm doing today for the Victoria University in Melbourne.
Active, no, in all activities inside like the school and outside and everything. You just really like tend. I think I read you. Read you. I read you as someone who like just maximizes the opportunities around. So it's really good, I think, as an approach to really settle and be able to, you know, blend in and immerse yourself in the environment that you're in.
Yeah, it was a good mix. With the part-time job, I didn't do any part-time jobs when I joined the university. The first semester was really more, you know, focusing on making friends and having fun. But after a while, you know, when the money does run out, you have to look for something. And that's when I started to look out for that. And yeah, went really well for me.
I think
it was a great time.
One of the questions that Filipinos considering studying in Australia always ask is, how hard is it to balance, you know, part-time job with studies? Is it easy, or, you know, does it take a lot of your time? How did you find that?
Yeah, look, I was lucky. I had some money saved that I took with me to Australia, so I wasn't fully relying on my part-time job to pay for my living costs. I think that is really challenging if you have that kind of approach. So I would recommend definitely taking some funds with you, and then having the part-time job on the side to just supplement your life and your quality of life really in Australia. So you can do more, you can travel and so forth. And that means then you have enough time to study. You're not working crazy hours, you know, you're working maybe something like 20 hours per week, and that leaves enough time to study and have fun.
JR, that's really a good tip, no?
Yeah, this resonates the third episode before, no? Our episode of Student Life. Like, our guests also said the same thing. Like, it's always better to have enough money with you when you go to Australia to study and then just do part-time as a supplement to what you already have. So you can have, like, time for entertainment as well. So, Seb, after graduating, could you describe to us the whole transition from student life to postgraduate visa?
Yeah, so that was really, I guess, the most challenging time, you know. Back then, when I graduated, there was no post-study work visa. That's a visa today that's quite popular among international student graduates that helps them to stay and find jobs in Australia. Back then, it didn't exist. So I actually applied for a different visa back then, which was a working holiday visa, which allowed me to work full time, but also have, you know, just do nothing if I wanted to. But my goal was to use that 1 year to get out in the job market. And my dream back then was to move to Sydney. So when I graduated, I moved to Sydney, which was especially challenging because Sydney is quite expensive, more expensive than Brisbane.
Yeah.
And I was struggling a bit for money. And I landed a couple good jobs. And I guess my advice to fresh graduates out there that were international students to get into the job market is, yes, definitely apply for jobs yourself. But what I did is I signed up for HR and different employment companies I submitted my profile and they applied for jobs for me. So in the end, I actually got contract jobs through this HR company that I joined. And one of my first job was working for a marketing company in sales. And I learned a lot of new skills there, especially related to cold calling and so forth. So that was good. That was only a couple months. And then I moved on to the next job, which was working for a superannuation company in Northern Sydney. So I got really good exposure back then to different jobs. And yeah, that's how I got, you know, my work first, my first work experience when I was a fresh graduate.
Did you mean like the headhunters, what you mentioned earlier?
Headhunters? That's a good question. Not really headhunters. I guess you have big HR companies like Randstad and others where, you know, everyone can submit their profile. And they work with companies together who just need staff for specific project work. And if you fit their profile, they hire you and you get quite a good, decent salary from your jobs. And you get the experience, which is, this is really what you need as a fresh graduate. You need experience to then hopefully get, you know, a better job, a bigger job. And that's what happened to me. I applied for more and more jobs after that and after I got my temporary jobs. And eventually I secured sponsorship from a business on the Gold Coast that sponsored me. And then I moved to the Gold Coast and worked on the Gold Coast for 1.5 years.
Wow, so good. It seemed like, you know, everything just flowed from, you know, getting one job to another and then the work visa. So how long were you on work visa before you got granted permanent residency?
Yeah, so with the flowing you mentioned, it can flow. I think that's the best case scenario. To be very honest, I think if I give one advice to everyone out there about working in Australia or studying, you need a lot of resilience. So I wasn't successful in the beginning when I applied, but in the end it worked out for me. But to be honest, I was almost ready to leave Australia at one point because I applied a lot of times and the jobs didn't come, but then in the end it just worked out and I was really lucky. And then I was sponsored for about 2 years. And then I had to make a big decision because I wanted to move to a different job. And back then, if you move to a different job, your sponsorship, a clock to apply for permanent residency starts again. So to apply for permanent residency back then, I needed to have be sponsored for 2 years. And after 1.5 years with my current sponsor, I moved to a new sponsor and I had to start again. So the clock started again from zero and I had to wait again 2 years to apply for permanent residency. So all over, I was probably, you know, 3.5 years on a sponsorship visa or 3 years, something like that.
Wow, I didn't know that. I thought, like, you know, once you start work visa, it's just like continuously regardless of which employer. So apparently it restarts.
Yeah, it did restart back then, but then I don't know today, the rules obviously about all these visas, that's one big important message to all the listeners out there. I think they do change all the time.
Yeah.
And they're not the same today as they were when I was sponsored. So I think that's important to then look out for these changes. And I guess the best source to go to is the Department of Home Affairs website, which is really transparent and gives you all the information.
JR, before you move to the next, I just have like a quick insight from what Seb said about work visa, because you mentioned like how 1.5 years into your first work visa, right, like you had to move to another one. And I think that's the pros and cons of like a sponsored work visa. Like you don't really have to spend a lot because your employer is sponsoring you and organizing your work visa, but then again you have to stick through it throughout like your 2 years, right? So if you feel like, oh, I'm not really feeling this job anymore, you know, you have to like suck it up, because, you know, if you want to stay to Australia in Australia, I mean, then you have to like
And I took that gamble because I could have stayed with my old employer and get PR sooner.
Yeah,
but I did choose to take a risk. I did choose to go for a new job, which I really liked and which I really wanted to do, and which was a better development for me and an improvement. So I took some risks, I guess, in terms of PR to go for a new job and to reset that clock. Yeah. But it did pay out today. So yeah, it was the right decision.
One last follow-up on this question, Seb. So was it hard for you? Like, how did that happen, moving from one work visa to another, like one sponsored employer to another? Did you have to talk to another, to your next employer? How did that go?
Yeah, it was relatively easy. Once you have the sponsorship from one employer back then, it was very easy then to just find a new employer that just says, yes, I'm happy to take over that sponsorship. There wasn't no paperwork really involved in that part. The initial sponsorship to get the sponsorship done with my first employer, that did take a while. There's some paperwork involved and an application fee. But I actually remember back then we didn't use a migration agent to do the first sponsorship. Mm-hmm. It was all done between my employer and myself, and it worked quite well.
It really panned out well, right, JR?
Yeah. So that reset thing, I think it happens before the application of the permanent residency visa, no? But correct me if I'm wrong, the number of years that would be counted towards your application for citizenship, it's still counted from the time that you get your first visa. I'm not sure if student visa is included in there, but I know from a working visa perspective, it's already counted towards the number of years that they credit towards your citizenship. So my question is, how long does it take actually for you before you can apply for that citizenship?
Yeah. So when I applied, the rules were that you need to be in Australia for 4 years, no matter on what visa, and you need to be 1 year on PR to apply for citizenship. So that's 1 + 3, basically. And that entitles you to apply for the citizenship. And I did apply for citizenship around, I think, a year ago. So all over, the whole citizenship visa, citizenship application took me 1 year for processing.
Yeah, but in terms of like the number of years that you stayed in there before you become a citizen,
that was four years.
Yeah. 4 years. Okay, mm-hmm. Got it. In terms of like the process, what are like the specific things that you have to go through when applying for citizenship? I heard that there's like some exams and all that.
Yeah, you have to basically only do an exam. You don't have to submit an English test. You do need to submit an English test when you're applying for permanent residency, I believe. For the citizenship test, it's a multiple choice test, which if you're interested out there to try it, you know, it's available online. You just Google Australian citizenship test, a mock test or something like that, and you'll get some good ideas what questions you'll be asked.
But they're not exact questions.
There are similar questions that are taken from the exam book. There's even an exam book out there which you can download. So you don't need to pay for it. You can download it as a PDF. You can even watch YouTube videos that read it to you. So look, the test is not that hard, to be very honest. And yeah, I think it's easy to pass the test. I passed very easily.
Congratulations. How long was the test?
It's 20 questions, and as long as you want it to be. If you race through the questions, then you might just take 15 minutes and you're done.
And you have to take it on site or?
Yeah, so you approach a Department of Home Affairs office, which they have offices all over Australia. And you go in, you register, and they put you next to in front of a computer, and you just do the test.
So it's computer based as well.
Yep.
But you have to be on site.
Okay.
Sorry, but if you, for example, failed the first time, is there like a retake that you can do?
I'm not sure. You know? I think there is.
Or that's not an option. Failure is not an option.
I think there definitely must be, otherwise, be some issues. And I also think you only need to pass 70% of the questions. Mm. So you don't need to have a score 100% on the test. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. So throughout this whole journey, I know you mentioned earlier with the sponsored work visa, you didn't have to hire a migration agent, but did you ever use a migration agent in one of those visas, or did you just do it yourself?
Very good question, Tina. I think I did use, if I remember correctly, a migration agent for my permanent residency visa. And look, in hindsight, did I really need a migration agent? I would probably say I could have done it by myself. But for everyone out there who wants to play it safe, who doesn't really know the process, I definitely recommend using a registered migration agent to do the paperwork for you.
Mm. So it really depends on you, no? On whether how organized you are and maybe how passionate you are in terms of like organizing everything.
Exactly. And look, to be very honest, I said this many times in this chat, I think, in the podcast. The Department of Home Affairs website is quite transparent and organized already. So they actually tell you exactly what you need to do, what documents you need to hand in, how long it takes. And if you just follow that, you can save a lot of money because a migration agent will charge you for their services. So I did pay a lot of money for that, and I did in the end question it a bit, but I had a peace of mind, which was important to me.
Exactly. And maybe for those special cases in which you don't know if this specific skill is actually qualified or something, you know, those advices that they can provide along the way, those are the ones that you wouldn't be able to take advantage of if you do it yourself, eh? Unless you're going to like maybe forums, discussion forums, because I know such things exist, right? Like for example, Facebook groups about visa application and everything. Have to go through the research.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jaya. I think these groups are definitely out there, and I would caution a lot of, I guess, everyone who's interested in this topic, caution yourself a bit about these groups. There's a lot of information on social media. Some of it is not correct, of course. It's just users commenting on their own experience and on rules, which again have always changed. So if you wanna play it safe, definitely speak to a migration agent or go on the department's website.
Right, that's a very good tip. So to those who would like to follow our footsteps and move to Australia but are like overwhelmed by the amount of information that they need to process and the things that they need to do, so where do you suggest that they start, and what's the simplest and most concrete step number one for them to do that move?
Yeah, I think it depends what you want to do. So if you're interested to really migrate to Australia, you already have a couple of degrees and you really want to migrate, you want to work in Australia, then a migration agent is probably needed to do that, especially when you're still abroad. If you are interested to study in Australia, like I did, then I think using an education agent is probably really good advice. When I applied from Germany, I did use an education agent who lodged my application with the university, helped me with the visa, and really answered all my questions that I had about Australia. So go for an education agent for studies, or if it's really about migration straightforward, then a registered migration agent will help.
I think, JR, last episode you mentioned this, there's a difference between education agents and migration agents, and that the number one is that it's free. You don't have to pay them, right? If you're the one applying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so don't hesitate. If you're planning to study, then go for it. There are a lot of legitimate education agents. But then again, if you're not sure, leave us a message and we can tell you which ones are the legit ones.
Yeah. Dina has a lot of connections to those
education
agents.
Yeah. The education agents, every I work for Victoria University of Melbourne, and we mention all our registered education agents on our website. So students actually can see the ones which are, you know, we're actually working with, and they can definitely provide the best advice.
Yeah, definitely. A message to our listeners, or can our listeners follow you in anything? You want to leave them a message that you want to impart, and anything that you like to promote?
Look, I think you can follow me, so you can find me. I'm on LinkedIn. I have a LinkedIn profile. But if you are interested to study in Australia, I would recommend, go to the Victoria University Melbourne website and send an application as international students. We will help you out. To every listener out there who's not in Australia, who's interested, once, you know, the travel ban is lifted and we can all travel again, it's a really great country to go to. I would definitely recommend it, especially if you're interested in studying. The international student experience is amazing, and you never know what it can lead to. In my case, I'm still here. I'm working. I'm quite happy, and I'm look forward to the future.
That's nice. Out of curiosity, do you have like dual citizenship?
I do. Yes, I do have dual citizenship. I was able to keep my German citizenship as well, which I had to apply for. It was another application that took a year's time.
And I think that's the same for the Philippines, Tina. If you're already on that stage, looking forward to it.
Very cool. Do we do a gimmick segment? Do you want to?
Yes.
Have a little.
Seb, we actually have like a surprise. Usually we have like a gimmick segment with our guests, and we don't usually tell them beforehand. But usually what we do. Since you've been there for quite some time already in Australia, maybe you can test us with your Australian slang knowledge. So maybe if you know anything that's any words or phrase that's only used in Australia, maybe you can test Tina and I in terms of like what does that mean or something. So if you can give us like a couple of examples. Do you have some things on top of your head?
Oh, that's a good one. Probably. The first one I learned was, I guess, throw a shrimp on the Barbie.
What?
On the Barbie?
I think Tina knows that.
Throw a shrimp on the Barbie.
Throw a shrimp on the barbecue.
Yeah, that's right. Barbie for barbecue.
Barbie for barbecue. Okay. Yeah. Do you have another one?
Not right now, actually. I have to think a bit, but
okay. Tina and I can give you one each, and then maybe one using New Zealand and one using Australia.
And then
see, you know it. Tina, you go ahead first. Yeah.
It's my favorite, and I'm not sure if you've listened to any of our past episodes, but I always use this. But what does chakasiki mean?
That's a bad one, Tina. That's not representing Australia.
We've never done that, Sam.
Chakasiki, what does it mean? Not going to work, although you can. throwing sick leave,
pretending to be sick.
That's right.
Yeah. One of the my favorite ones that is used in New Zealand is wop wops.
Wow.
And I use it in a sentence. So, where are you taking us? It's as if we are in the wop wops. I couldn't see anything.
In the middle of nowhere.
Wow. Yeah. That's really
good.
This
is actually in the US, they say whoop whoop.
Oh, yes. So, whoop whoop is the New Zealand version of the whoop.
Wow. That is so similar. Amazing. Mm.
Yeah. Tina, do you have another one?
Nah, that's pretty much it.
Maybe last one is mine. Choka block.
That's
also my favorite. So, if someone will ask you, would you like to have some snack? No, mate, I'm kind of choka block.
What does that mean?
Exactly. So it means like you're full, or your stomach is full, or your car is full. It's like, can you fit this in your in your car? No, the car's choke a block. So it means like really full.
Learn something new today.
Yes.
Anyway, just for our quick shout out segment, I have nothing but shout out for Nicola, who's Seth's girlfriend.
Hi. Who's in his back, right?
Who's in your back?
Hi, Nicola.
Hi, Nicola.
Yes, and also to our listeners who have sent us a message on our Facebook pages, Efren Domingo, Jem Nukum Ainza, and Tim Tevez. And I hope you guys get our responses and continue giving us those messages if you have those questions and any concerns. Tina, what's your favorite key learning or insight from this episode and from Seb?
I like what Seb said earlier about resilience because...
Oh my gosh, you're getting the answer.
That's a major lesson, right? Like, there are a lot of visa options, but if they were that easy, then people will just 100% like do it. So it's not always going to go your way, but if you're resilient enough and you just want to pursue it, and if you really want to migrate to Australia, then explore these different options. Just keep trying and trying.
Right. That's also my answer. Resilience is the key. But maybe on top of that is like, do your research. Trust the information that you have, but you have to filter them out. Do not well, you have the trust, but at the same time, be critical about them as well and make sure that you compare them with the valid resources and the people that you trust.
Very good.
Otherwise, you might get lost.
That's right. And above all, have fun. That's
have fun.
Yes, enjoy the process. You know, because you will go through hardships and everything, but there will come a time, a certain point, that you will look back and that you will say, okay, those are hard times, but I'm already here now. Like,
enjoy the process and enjoy Australia.
Yes,
thank you so much, Seb. I hope you enjoyed your first podcast experience.
You're welcome. Yeah, I was. I really liked it. It was great. Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
And to our Kaveshis, hope you have enjoyed our topic for this episode. If you have any other topic suggestions, comments, reactions, or any message you want to send, please get in touch with us on our Facebook and Instagram pages, Finding Answers. Or send us an email at finding.answers@gmail.com.
Yes, and join us again in our next episode of the second season of Finding Answers with JR.
And Tina.
Bye, Kaveshis!
Bye! Thank you, Seb!
Thank you, guys!